Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapandantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhaischa Kripa Sindhubhyeh Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. We are reading from Sri Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, which describes the nectarian glories of Sri Vrindavan Dham. May the Jamuna, where waters sweet as grape sugar milk nectar. I wonder what that is. Grape sugar milk nectar. Anyway, where grape sugar milk nectar are filled with golden lotus buds and other flowers, where the shores are made of many jewels, where the water is wonderful with the splashing of playful, splendid jewel fish. You ever heard of the jewel fish? The spiritual world, inanimate things become animate, animate becomes inanimate, jewels take on consciousness. So here a fish made of jewels. Where there is a wonder of glistening jewel staircases, where the shores are very beautiful with groves of many kinds of wonderful flower-filled trees and vines, and fragrant with camphor and splendid bakul trees. Where along the shores are frightened does with wide open eyes. We should just imagine these places. I mean, in other words, this verse should help us to meditate. It is creating a wonderful picture before our eyes. Where the sweet fragrance of many splendid forests of kadamba and champak trees are everywhere, where there is an abundance of pollen, flying birds, pleasant breezes, and a sweet splendor everywhere, where forest groves are reflected in the deep waters, and where Sri Sri Radha Krishna's bliss increases, increase the happiness of you all. It is a blessing. The Jamuna is decorated with many swans, cranes, and karandavas. All directions are pleasant with the fragrance of the new pundarikas and other lotus flowers. Bumblebees stay in the forest of kalaras, utpalas, pankajas, and other lotus flowers. The soft singing of the maddened bees enchants the ears of the entire world. We have said before that three things in Vrindavan are so merciful and kind and have been here since the time of Lord Krishna. Namely, the Jamuna River, Govardhan, and the dust of Vrindavan. So here we hear the glorification of Sri Jamuna Devi. How many splendid lakes, streams, wells, and ponds in this beautiful land of Vrindavan do not have their sweet waters anointed with cosmetic ointments left by Sri Sri Radha Krishna? How many young hills of jewels and gold have not been the places of their wonderful pastimes? How much splendid beauty is not present in this very fragrant land of Vrindavan? I meditate on all of Vrindavan, which, with its beasts, birds, forest, groves of trees and flowering vines, hills, pleasant caves, pools, wells, ponds, streams, lakes, and jewel courtyards, as well as the Jamuna shores, and everything there is enchanted by Radha Madhava's beauty and is blind with love for them. I wonder if we've read this verse. You tell me if you've heard it before. Mohini Murti is not wonderful to my heart. What is Parvati? What is Urvashi? What is any exquisitely beautiful girl to me as I glimpse her maidservant's splendor? May Srimati Radharani, Vraja's queen, who charms supremely charming Krishna's heart, appear in my heart. No, we have not read it. Again, the beauty of the Vraja Gopis, particularly the maidservants of Srimati Radharani, is being praised here. It's interesting to see how so many verses are devoted to appreciating the wonderful qualities of the gopis. Not only does Prabodhananda Saraswati express his appreciation for his worshipful deity, Srimati Radharani, but also for all of those who are her expansions. In Brahma Samhita, text 37 describes that the gopis are the expansions of Ladini Shakti. They are the expansions of Srimati Radharani, and each of them embodies various qualities of her pristine personality. So, in a sense, to appreciate all of them is to appreciate her, and to appreciate her is to appreciate them. And when I read this, I immediately felt that the same is true within our society, that I personally find that it is not possible for me to simply worship Srila Prabhupada and not worship Prabhupada's disciples and other followers. I can't separate, in my mind, my spiritual master from my God brothers, my God sisters, and other devotees, because that is the training that I received from Prabhupada. It was very clear in serving him that to serve him and to please him meant to serve those who were dear to him. So this principle, which Prabodhananda Saraswati is enunciating here through actual glorification, it is as true in the absolute sense of the spiritual world. It is also equally true here within our present life as devotees, that it is not simply that we appreciate Krishna or that we appreciate our guru, but we appreciate those who are dear to Krishna, those who are dear to our guru. And in fact, our guru is never alone, but he's always surrounded by his loving servants, his loving disciples, just as Srimati Radharani is so much more attractive and so much more wonderful being surrounded by all of the gopis. The example is given of a beautiful jewel, which may be very extraordinarily beautiful, but when it's set amongst many other jewels, then its beauty becomes enhanced. Of course, another way of saying is then it enhances the beauty of all of those jewels which surround it. But the fact is that holding a beautiful jewel in your hand, certainly you'll appreciate it, but how much more beautiful it looks when it is set, you know, in the midst of so many other jewels. So Srimati Radharani and her worshipful Lord Krishna, the two of them together, set amongst all of these supremely qualified gopis, they become completely captivating. And the affairs of Radha and Krishna become all the more attractive when we see the interaction, not only with those who are the gopis, but those who are cowherd boys, those who are parents, and even, you know, those who are inimical, you know, like Jatila and Kutila and Abhimanyu. Some of you went to Jawat. Who went there? Okay. Did you get to see the deities of Kutila, Jatila, and Abhimanyu? Why? What happened? Huh? Oh, you didn't have qualification enough. Not that it was closed. Or perhaps you had so much qualification. But I think we had better qualification. When we went, we got such a good darshan. First time I went, I did not see them. I didn't even know they were there. But the second time, I didn't see anyone else but them. And when you see them, you will not forget them. They're so extraordinary in their appearance. Abhimanyu is the shadow of Krishna. He's the same color In so many ways, he might be mistaken, but he's practically the opposite. In every respect, he is the opposite of Krishna in so many ways, and yet he's similar. You know, just like a shadow does everything we do, follows us about, so many ways it is similar, but a shadow is not the real thing. So this is the so-called husband of Srimati Radharani, and that is his residence, Jawad. So seeing, you know, Radharani surrounded by these shadows, you know, makes her appeal, or it makes her, the reality of Radharani shine forth all the more. So this is Radha Krishna Leela, with the mixing of so many different personalities, not just Radha and Krishna alone. So it is very appropriate, in other words, that Prabodhananda Saraswati is spending time glorifying the gopis, the manjaris, the dam, the cows, the vines, the river, Jamuna, and every single other aspect, because all of these make Radharani look even more extraordinarily beautiful. All of these are in, they're all glorifying her, they're all meant for her glorification. They become fortunate by her touch. So it is the right way to glorify. To directly glorify someone is not as good as to glorify something in connection with the person that you want to glorify. It is more attractive way. Just like if we say, you know, if we call someone by name, it has a certain attraction or appeal. But, for example, if we speak about someone who is very tall and very thin and who is very scholarly and writes many devotional books and is a disciple of Prabhupada, so immediately, without naming the person, everybody will know who we are talking about. But if we just say Satsarup Maharaj, then immediately everybody knows. But more poetic is to say so many things about the person without specifically mentioning his name. So Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying so many things about all of the aspects of Vrindavan. Actually, it is all about the glories of Radharani. To speak the glories of Vrindavan means to glorify Srimati Radharani. So he is doing it in such a way that Radharani comes out more and more wonderfully. And then when you hear her name, it is like sheer nectar. Because actually everything you've been hearing about is in connection to her. So when finally her name is pronounced, then we feel even more satisfaction. When will I see? When will I see the fulfillment of my desires? The ocean of splendor of Sri Radha's feet. The bodily hairs risen with ecstatic devotional love. The sweet music that was learned, and the wonderful flower garlands, jewel necklaces, ornaments and garments left by her and her beloved in Vrindavan. So many opportunities are there for Radha and Krishna to distribute their prasadam. That is to say, their jewelry, their clothing, their prasadam. And all of these intimate associates of Radha and Krishna are being maintained. They're living on these remnants. And their daily activities are going on like this. One festival after another in which Radha and Krishna are not able to meet, then they're able to overcome so many obstacles, and finally they meet, and all of this is being done with the help of their assistants. And the prasadam for helping them, that is to say, the blessing that the divine couple gives to their helpers is to give their clothing, their ornaments, their food remnants to the maidservants. So Prabodhananda Saraswati is hankering for that. When will I find these again? When in Sri Vrindavan's groves and paths will I see a splendor as fair as molten gold, and like an ocean of beauty moving at every step with hundreds of currents of gracefulness of every fresh youth and violently tossed by great waves of ever-fresh youth and violently tossed by great waves of ever-new love for the dark moon of Krishna. See? Here's a nice description without mentioning Radharani's name. But it's much more vivid. When in Vrindavan's groves and paths will I see a splendor as fair as molten gold, and like an ocean of beauty moving at every step with hundreds of currents of gracefulness of ever-fresh youth and violently tossed by great waves of ever new love for the dark moon of Krishna. May Vrindavan's splendid treasure, which has a youthful body, a golden complexion, tossed by waves of ever new amorous pastimes, flooded with currents of eternal wonderful beauty, overwhelmed by great transcendental love, decorated with splendid flower garlands, garments and ornaments, and with its auspicious glory, fill the gopis with wonder, appear before me. He who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not counted among the incarnations of God, who in his transcendental form appears in Yadupuri and Madhupuri, and who in Vraja, the best of Madhupuri's forests, stays with his friends, gopis and cows, does not very hard to read this. It's not making sense. Ah, all right. It's hard to read. We'll try it again. He who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not counted among the incarnations of God, who in his transcendental form appears in Yadupuri and Madhupuri, and who in Vraja, the best of Madhupuri's forests, stays with his friends, gopis and cows, sentence structure makes it impossible to understand. He ends by saying, does not attract my heart, which has now gone to Radha's forest. So perhaps it means that, first of all, Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and he is not an incarnation of God. Why? Because he is the source of all incarnations. And he lives in Yadupuri, which is Dwarka, in Madhupuri, Mathura, and finally in Braja. Krishna lives in these three places. In his feature as Yadu Kumar, he lives in Dwarka and in Mathura, where there are mostly the same associates. And in his original Shamsundar form, he lives in Braj. So he says, but still, that person who lives in these places is not attracting my heart, because my heart has gone to the forest where Srimati Radharani is residing. So again, this is the expression of one who is the unalloyed devotee of Srimati Radharani and prefers to be her maidservant even more, prefers to be in her group even more than to directly be with Krishna. So this is the line that our Goswamis have recommended and personally practiced following. Not to directly aspire for direct contact with Krishna, but rather to be in the camp of Srimati Radharani and help her to please Krishna. That they should want to serve her, and she will give pleasure and service to Krishna. So this mood of the followers of Srimati Radharani is being expressed here. Now we'll take up the next. There's a very long poem, but we'll start from here. What nonsense! What nonsense! What misfortune! Even though he is a great man, he still does not like blissful Vrindavan. So many great men in the world are acclaimed for some great virtue. But here he says, what nonsense. How could anybody be called great if they don't aspire or don't like Sri Vrindavan? In other words, if someone doesn't like Vrindavan, they cannot be a great person. And anyone who does like Vrindavan is certainly a great person. If even the, quotes, greatest person refuses to take shelter of blissful Vrindavan, he should be called the lowest of men. I do not love blissfully sweet Vrindavan. That's a statement. What is the good of my knowledge if If I do not love blissfully sweet Vrindavan, what is the good of my knowledge, devotion, or renunciation? And we see that sometimes a person is very knowledgeable, but what value has that knowledge got if it does not bring one to understand Brajendra Nandana, Krishna? We meet often with persons who are either materially very knowledgeable, scientists, scholars, etc. But without having knowledge of Krishna, what value is their knowledge? They don't know what the real goal of life is. And as devotees, we do not feel very attracted to them. What to speak of them? What about persons who are, what to speak of persons like them? What about also persons who are in other lines or sampradayas, who are worshippers of Vishnu or Narayan? We also find that it's not satisfying. Their knowledge is not conclusive. They don't understand Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, the Krishna's original personality of Godhead. What to speak of them? There are persons who do understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they don't worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And without understanding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it means they do not understand Radha and Krishna's loving affairs. And we question that without following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what is the process that they will recommend for purifying the heart in this age? I had experience some years ago. I went on a tour of South India. So many temples, Vaishnava temples were there, and I met many Vaishnava persons. But I found that they were having greater and greater difficulty finding young people to become the priests in their temples. And I also, apart from the mere fact that everything was so much Aishvarya, the mood, you know, of worshipping Vishnu was so much in awe and reverence, it did not have in any way the charm of Raja temples. But even beyond that point, I also saw that it's very hard without the process of chanting Hare Krishna to actually get people qualified even in a pious place like South India. People are not able to take up a process as effective as the chanting of Hare Krishna. So what I saw is that they're having great difficulty in getting qualified priests, as they formerly had so many. Now they can't find young people so easily to serve in their temples. And even when they do, the mood is not satisfying to a heart of a person who is practicing Krishna consciousness. It just doesn't satisfy in the same way.
Well, even if someone's worshipping Radha and Krishna, if they don't worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then that means how can they express the service attitude and simply, Radha and Krishna, love for Radha and Krishna in the form of distributing literature or chanting for the name? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has introduced the means and then also the moods of Radha and Krishna. And I was told that the one who worships Lord Vishnu is called Vaishnava, someone who worships Krishna is called Karshana, and someone who worships Radharani is called Dodiya. So actually all of us there.
Therefore we call it Gaudiya Vaishnavas. We are called Gaudiya Vaishnavas. That's a very good point. We are not merely Vaishnavas, we are trying to become Gaudiya Vaishnavas, worshippers of Srimati Radharani. Yes?
Prabhupada was asked, why do they call everyone a Vaishnava? And Prabhupada said that the common denominator, those who worship Vishnu or Ramachandra or Krishna.
One thing also that Prabhupada said in Bombay is that to be called a Vaishnava is a very, very great achievement. He said, I don't feel myself qualified to be called a Vaishnava. He said, a Vaishnava is one who has totally turned his back on material sense gratification. So while we are all sitting here feeling very proud of ourselves for being Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we should remember that to be a Vaishnava is not a very easy affair. It is a very exalted position.
Why is it that previously they were able to find qualified persons in South India to do all the pujas?
Because the effects of Kali Yuga are becoming magnified extremely in this century. So I suspect that 100 years ago or 200 years ago, things were much better than they are now. And now that you've asked that question, it's allowed me to really clarify what I meant. What I meant to say was that the Kali Yuga is so polluting that the only process which can qualify someone to actually become purified heart is the process of chanting the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Mantra. It's not just in Western countries. What I saw is that even in South India, which is so pious in so many ways and so much with such great advantages, they need the Maha Mantra as badly as anybody else does. Everybody's in the same position in this age. So what I began to see was that unless the other sampradayas start to promulgate the chanting of Hare Krishna, they're eventually going to have great difficulty surviving.
But they'll have to accept Lord Chaitanya also?
Yes, it will happen. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be accepted by everybody. And the Krishna consciousness movement is the vehicle which will bring that about. This movement has such an important service to perform to the world. Just like now, there is an attack being made by various groups of Goswamis and Babajis to try to say that the original Mayapur is not on the eastern side of the Ganga, but on the western side, which is presently where Navadvip is. And they're trying to discredit the present Mayapur. In doing so, they're trying to discredit Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and ISKCON and all of the other followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this type of action has to be checked very strongly. And ISKCON's, actually what it, I feel that ISKCON's activities especially bring about, it's so prominent. Prabhupada's activities were so prominent, and Mayapur now is becoming so prominent that certain persons are becoming, desirous of having that type of position. But actually, Prabhupada's society and the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have to clearly stand strong on this point. There are so many scriptures which clearly show where it mentions that Mayapur is on the eastern side of the Ganga. But they, by one means or another, they're trying to establish a different conclusion. They have, and they're spending money to do it, publishing archaeological surveys and all other things directly in disagreement with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, in the long run, it will not be proven that way. But we do see that so many times people try to cover over the pure process of Krishna consciousness and the glories of this sampradaya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his bona fide followers will prevail. And gradually, if people don't accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, then Prabhupada said that they will not be counted as a religion anymore.
When I went to Tirupati about 4 years ago, they published a local magazine, in English, and it had an article by Swami Vivekananda in it, at Tirupati, which is the seat of Ramanujacharya. And I mentioned it to one of the devotees at the ISKCON Tirupati Center. I said, why is it, they're supposed to be... Why are they having Mayavadi articles in Tirupati? And he said, when Prabhupada was there, he was chastising the leaders of the temple for allowing this Mayavadi philosophy to come in. Because what it is the government.
Mm. So anyway, therefore we have to be very vigorous in our preaching work, especially in India and other places as well. Just like now, I saw a book I mean, the point I'm going to try to make is this, that sooner or later they will try to say that ISKCON temple and the other temples in Mayapur are less important because it's not the real Mayapur. And so they will discredit the city that we're trying to build to fulfill the prediction of Nityananda Prabhu, which he gave to Jiva Goswami, which is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is the first point. The second point is, now I have seen a book put out by so-called scholars, mundane scholars, right? And this book describes the process of Raghunuga Bhakti. And then it asserts that the actual followers who understood Rupa Goswami was another person named Rupa Kaviraj, right? Now, actually, Rupa Kaviraj is the person who introduced the bogus Siddha Pranali system, which was that you give someone, from the time they get initiation, you tell them who they are in Krishna's pastimes. That's not the system we follow. In Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada attacks that system very, very clearly. He says, this is not the correct understanding. You don't tell someone who they are in Krishna's pastimes when their hearts are full of lust, greed, anger, and all other mundane qualities. But you give them the Hare Krishna mantra, and eventually Gayatri mantra, and by gradual upliftment, one day, you know, in their when they achieve a liberated position, they will come to understand who they are in Krishna's pastimes. So this system that Rupa Goswami taught and the system that this other person taught are not the same. But now this scholar is proposing that the actual proper understanding of what Rupa Goswami meant was not understood properly by Raghunath Das Goswami and by the other followers of Rupa Goswami, like Vishwanath Chakravarti. But actually, this Rupa Kaviraj, he understood properly. So that means that the next thing that they're trying to do, first they will try they're trying to discredit Mayapur and whatever will go on in Mayapur, like the building of this city. The second thing is that they will discredit the process of bhakti by trying to show that the real process is not the real process, and another process is the real process. So, in both respects, you know, our activities and our own sadhana have to gradually dispel these things. And the person who this author was counseled by, right, who advised them, is the person by the name of Neil Delmonico. And that person happens to be Nittai Das. So all of the Nittai Das, Prabhupada personally, you know, I don't want to say what he called them, but you know, it's the only time I ever know where Prabhupada sent a letter to the whole movement telling him not to let this person into any temple. So all of this is to say how we have to be so philosophically vigilant in our own practices. We have to be so much lined up in the parampara with so much determination. We have absolute unflinching faith in our acharyas. In the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in Prabhupada's words, because so many attacks will come, but it will just be like clouds which come over the sky, and then eventually they will get blown away. So I'm just saying this because sometimes someone may say, if you ever hear these rumors about Mayapur being on which side, it's very clear which side it is. Bhaktivinoda Thakur clearly established it based on a shastra, and the process of Raghunuga Bhakti, you know, as a part of sadhana bhakti, which we follow, has nothing at all to do with this business of Siddha Pranali as it is given, where you get some perfected mantra at the time of your first initiation. That's not our system, and we don't follow that system.
It reminds me of the time of Gorkhasha that's guarded in how all of the Pandas and Babaji's and whatnot, they all floss over his
body.
So they wanted to install this body samadhi so they can make a lot of money. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati stood his ground, and he challenged all of them as far as their purity was concerned. And all of them back then.
Let us go forward. Pathetic are my scholarship, noble birth, good character, and splendid array of virtues, because in this life I do not love Vrindavan. I am a living corpse. So if one has so many good virtues, but if he has no attraction for Vrindavan, then what is its value? Because I have not renounced everything and taken shelter of Vrindavan, I am more pitiful than those pitied by the pitiful, and I am more foolish than the greatest fool. Because I have not renounced everything and taken shelter of Vrindavan, I am more pitiful than those pitied by the pitiful, and I am more foolish than the greatest fool. If someone wants to be a mercy case, then the way to be a mercy case is to come and live in Vrindavan. Sometimes people say that he's just a mercy case. So the best mercy cases are those who live in Vrindavan, because they get the most mercy. The Dham is so merciful. Lord Chaitanya's feet are far away. Powerful Kali has appeared. How will love for Krishna be attained without love for Vrindavan? This is a very interesting point. Lord Chaitanya's feet are far away. Powerful Kali has appeared. How will love for Krishna be attained without love for Vrindavan? Let us hear some explanations of this. Mother Karta.
What would be your response? Why would it be that that the prominence is given here to loving Vrindavan as a way it seems even easier than Lord Chaitanya's feet? So Lord Chaitanya's feet are far away. Powerful Kali has appeared. How will love for Krishna be attained without love for Vrindavan? Any wise ladies? Can they venture to answer this? A parent? Any bold person?
The Lord Chaitanya told his main followers to...
Loudly.
Lord Chaitanya told his main followers to take Shiva in Vrindavan and excavate all the holy places in Vrindavan. So in the future, all of us would, and also in the future, would have the benefit of staying in Krishna's abode.
Why? What is it about Krishna's abode which is so valuable? What is it about these pastime places? What's so special, or what is the effect?
First of all, by exciting Vrindavan, and gets a chance to see all these different places.
Speak loudly.
Whereas in any other place, one may not have the same smile of Krishna. But here in Vrindavan, the intensity of remembrance of Krishna is so easy. Even like if you know Mayapur, this is the abode of Lord Chaitanya. And that Mayapur is known as Gupta Vrindavan. We cannot see Gopna, we cannot see Radhakunda, we cannot see so many places. But here in Vrindavan, all these places are manifested. So it's so easy for us to, just by a little knowledge, advance in Krishna.
When you're in Vrajmandala, you're already in the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya is offering us a way to get to the spiritual world.
So to be here would not be separate from Lord Chaitanya's instruction. In other words, we would find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here in the form of his instruction to be here.
I just, Navadvipa Mahatmya, Bhakti Vinod Thakura's class, the opposite. At first you have to understand Navadvipa Lord Chaitanya, then you can understand Radha Krishna Vrindavan.
Okay. Can someone respond to this point?
That would be indicated in the shloka, because he's saying that Lord Chaitanya's feet are far away. That means he's feeling separation and appreciating Lord Chaitanya already. Otherwise he wouldn't be making that statement.
Do you understand? He says, This is a statement of separation. He's feeling intense separation.
He's not making a statement that...
He's not saying that Lord Chaitanya comes after.
No, he's just saying that Lord Chaitanya's feet are pertaining.
Or he's feeling intent. He's making the point, who is making the point, that Prabodhananda Saraswati is feeling great feeling of separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he's feeling solace by being in the Dham, which is none different than Krishna himself. I mean, that you see that picture in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita of Lord Chaitanya embracing
you know, Girya Govardhan. And he used to press the Govardhan Shila to his eyes, right? And bathe the Shila with his tears. And his, the imprint of his thumb is to be seen in the Shila which he was worshipping. Because he felt that he had Krishna personally with him. So one of the wonders of this Rajadham is that Krishna is tangibly present here in the form of these pastime places. The trees that you can embrace, the dust which you can place upon your head, Govardhan which you can see with your eyes, the Jamuna which you can drink, which you can bathe within. These are visibly tangible aspects of Krishna. They are Krishna and Krishna's associates here in Braja, available for our immediate association. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no one could come and know what is Braj. So without, it is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. It can't be separate.
He's the one who sent his devotees to Vrindavan.
Still, there is truth to the statement that without worship of Navadvipa and without worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one cannot understand Radha Krishna in Braj. But we see that when devotees go to the teacher, when they go to Lord Chaitanya, they come up with Radha Krishna. Because what came out of Lord Chaitanya's mouth was all the time also Radha Krishna's pastime. And similarly, we see when devotees tour in Nagadvipdham, so many pastimes about Vrajadham also become repeated. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. So one of the meanings is that when you worship Lord Chaitanya, you will eventually realize Radha Krishna is experienced also in the beginning. That as soon as you touch the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, you hear about Radha Krishna. There's so much intertwined. Let us read a little more.
Yeah. How about this point that we are doing without mounting any name?
Do you want to speak about that?
No, I don't hear
it. We can't hear you.
He said, what about this point about about taking shelter of Vrindavan without renouncing many bad things which are within us? You are qualified to speak because you have gotten free of many bad things. You should tell us how you have done
it. I'm jump up like a tadpole.
Say, trying to jump up like a tadpole. Tadpoles do not jump. Because if you see how Prabhupada has arranged, we made a guest house here. Actually, this guest house has got, you know, attached baths. It is quite a good place. I mean, even if it has had its difficulties, still it is quite an opulent place compared to some of the, what we see that, you know, Goswamis, how they were living. So Prabhupada many times said that our Western devotees require certain facilities. And I think we can say it's not only the Western devotees, but nowadays it's all people require some facilities. So it is very difficult to voluntarily practice austerities. I personally have experience. I used to do very strict Nirjala Ekadasi for some years. But after a while, I stopped doing that. Mainly because I was traveling so much, I found it physically difficult. And I think as one gets a little older, it becomes more passionate in the body. But my point is this. That is one type of austerity. But there's another type of austerity, which is preaching. And that austerity, I did not stop. So my personal experience is that it would be more beneficial to the people, to humanity at large, more pleasing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives, and more. And they used to take their bath with the water melted from the snow. You can understand how cold that water was. Terrible. And that, they were taking their bath by that, and they were getting their drinking water by melting the snow. And why were they doing this? So they could distribute books. Of course, one might ask, who were they distributing books? They were distributing books under those circumstances. So they went through so much austerity, but not just because the yogis also do this. They may also do like this, but for what purpose? To control the sense of it, but they did it for the pleasure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada. For a very positive reason, to promote preaching. So my feeling would be that certainly you are correct in saying that to live in the Dham, but to not become renounced, is hypocrisy. It is hypocrisy. But to try and simply strip oneself of attachments is not so easy as learning how to use everything one has in the service of Krishna fully. And that will bring one to a principle of a higher taste. And gaining that higher taste, material attachments will appear insignificant. And I think this is the process that Prabhupada expected of ISKCON.
The examples left behind for us, but you don't love them.
But you see, we understand Raghunath Das in terms of Srila Prabhupada. I don't understand Raghunath Das forgetting Prabhupada. Raghunath Das lived the way he did, but Prabhupada did not live that way. But I saw Prabhupada live, you know, in Manhattan when there was no one there, living in a loft by himself, under great difficulties, living in the Bowery with a crazy person, living under so many difficult times, and but for a different purpose. In other words, when he had to be, he could be just as detached and austere as Raghunath Das, but it was for the purpose of preaching. We cannot do Bhajananandi in this age. The whole system of, I mean, Raghunath Das Goswami's system, you know, was like he was in a mood of a Babaji. But you can't be a Babaji very easily in this age. Prabhupada initiated one devotee as a Babaji. Do you know what happened to him? Do you know the history of this devotee? This one devotee was given a diagnosis of cancer. So Prabhupada, he told Prabhupada, I have 6 months to live. So Prabhupada said, then you should take Babaji. And you should go to Mayapur and live like a Babaji and chant all day. So he said, anyway, before I go, I'll do some preaching. So they took him to college campuses and they said, hear from so-and-so, Das. You know, his name was Odolomi Das. Hear from Odolomi Das, who has only 6 months left to live. Okay? And he was preaching very strongly. Then he went to Mayapur. And he was trying to live as a Babaji. But after a while, he found it too difficult. So he went back and he thought, I'll go back to America and continue my preaching until I die. But when he went back, he again had a test and they discovered he didn't have cancer. As soon as he heard that diagnosis, he immediately gave up Krishna consciousness, went back to his old girlfriend and fell away. So, Babaji life is not, you know, at least for, I don't know about people from India, but I don't recommend it for those outside of India, and it doesn't seem to be so easy for those within India either. Because one difficulty is this, that it is the Goswami line of preaching will gain you more mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu than being a Babaji. Unless you are such a rare soul that your renunciation is so full of bhakti that you are attracting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like anything, it seems to be more safe to go out and vigorously spread Krishna consciousness while practicing all of the principles of Krishna conscious sadhana, you know, and going out and giving the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That will gain you Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And if you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, how much quickly you'll advance. And if you have advancement of Krishna consciousness, automatically, jnayatuyasabhairagyam jnanamchayarabhaitukam. Automatically, knowledge and renunciation follow when one practices bhakti.
Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. So if one is doing Bhakti Yoga to Krishna, then automatically he will get Jnana Vairagya. And what is the best service to Krishna? You go and preach Mahaprabhu's mission. That is Prabhupada's order, that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order. That's my response. You're satisfied. So when are you coming with us to the White
House?
What is that MA? MA in Krishna consciousness. Okay. You are quite qualified. Yesterday you were called the transcendental postal peon. The guru, Prabhupada said the guru is a postal peon. So you are guru. The guru is a postal peon and you are a postal peon. That means you are guru. Anyway, so we have somehow joked our way through. So we will begin from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy tomorrow. Sri Vrindavan Dham.